Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Lawrence Scott. We'll be talking about his book, Professional Roulette Prediction. We'll be talking to Lawrence in a few minutes. The Stardust was a longtime casino on the Las Vegas Strip. It got demolished several years ago, so the Boyd Group could build a mega resort called Echelon. When the housing bubble burst in 2007, followed by a recession, the Echelon never got off the ground. Now the property is going to be sold to a Malaysian company who intends to build a luxury resort. What do you know about this, Munch?
Nothing more than what you just said. I just think it's great news that work is going to start happening. They're going to have to employ thousands of people to build that place and then to run it once it's built. So it's great news for Vegas and great news for gamblers to have
good,
another.
Yeah, being good for the city of Vegas and good news for players are not exactly the same thing. But
I think it'll be good for both. I mean, it's good to have another operator in town.
Yeah, because now the Strip is mainly owned by two people, or
right.
two companies.
Yeah.
Two or three, depending on how you count. But good. All right. So we need a logo.
Yeah. So iTunes, you know, the show is podcast in iTunes. That's how a lot of people get it. iTunes wants us to have a 1400 by 1400 pixel logo. So if any of our listeners are creatively minded and have an inclination to try to make a logo for us, we'd love to look at them. Maybe we could post them. Maybe I could put them up on my blog, the submissions, and we could
vote on it
and get a logo for the show. So anybody who wants to, you can reach us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, or you can reach Bob or me at our blogs. And
good. Know. And we're compensating them with millions of dollars. Is this right?
I have a signed copy of Whale Hunt in the Desert. And certainly if you don't have either of our books, you know, we could give you those two for
good.
Whoever wins. But mostly it'll be the honor of having done the logo for Gambling
That's
with an
it.
Edge.
That's it. All right. Good. All right. Now, the last time lawyer Bob Nersessian appeared on this show, we talked about one of his cases where some Nevada players were flying home from the Caribbean after a winning gambling trip, and the plane stopped in Atlanta, and the DEA, Drug Enforcement, seized some, I think it was $80,000 or $90,000.
$90,000, yeah.
So, when Nersessian sued, they have the money back, and then now they're going after the DEA for false arrest.
Well, and for stealing their money, basically. You know, they had documentation that showed that they had won the money gambling. They had other documentation, and, you know, he just stole the money. And they stole it in Georgia rather than the final destination where they lived. So
as last time Bob was on the show, they had recently had a decision that it was okay to sue them in Nevada, which is where they live, rather than in Georgia, where this took place. Now there's a recent development in this. What is that, Richard?
So it was appealed, and now it's going to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is really a great feather in Bob's cap to argue a case at the United States Supreme Court.
Especially if he wins,
yeah.
All right, probably have to wear a suit for that.
And we're trying to get Bob to come back on within the next few weeks. So
yes, we are. Now, earlier today, I was speaking to Richard on the phone. He suggested I read Nolan Dalla's blog. Nolan Dalla is a media director for the World Series of Poker. And every year just before the World Series starts, which is going to be in July, Nolan comes on and chats with us for a bit. Now, I've never read his blog, but I thought I'd take a look. Today's posting is about a dinner party he didn't like, and I could not imagine that's what Munchkin wanted me to be talking about. So, although Munchkin writes about his favorite restaurants and his nuts, I go, well, maybe. But anyway, the one from yesterday, however, was about needing to find 120,000 quickly. Is that the one you want, Richard?
That was it. And, you know, my feeling was, so it was a story about him in Atlantic City, and he was representing, I believe, Poker Stars at the time. And he had 12 players that had won a seat at a $10,000 buy-in table, and he needed the $120,000 to give to the 12 players, and the bank had refused the wire. So he had basically 12 hours or something to come up with $120,000 in cash
in the middle of December.
Yeah, Monday night in the middle of December in Atlantic City. And, you know, and he was, not only did he get 120, somebody gave him an extra 10. And I just thought this can only happen to professional gamblers, you know.
Well, you have to have pretty good connections. There's a lot of professional gamblers who would not be able to raise $120,000 in 12 hours.
Right. Right. Although he did have the benefit of being in a casino city, and there was a major poker tournament going on at the time. So that was an advantage to him. But I actually had a story where I was shooting a movie here in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And often you need a lot of petty cash. And the line producer came to me and was like, you know, the banks have closed and we need 10,000. And I was like, all right, call Max Rubin. Just tell him you need 10,000. She's like, I'm just going to call this guy and he's going to give me $10,000 in cash. I was like, yes, here's the number. And she did. She went and called Max. Max was like, okay, here's my address. She went over and gave her 10,000. It was like, that doesn't happen to people who aren't in the gambling world.
That's true. 10,000 I could raise easily.
Yeah,
120,000 at a home not near where I was would be a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
All right. So, Richard, why don't you tell us who Lawrence Scott is and how come he's sitting here in the studio?
Lawrence Scott is the author of Professional Roulette Prediction. He's been a professional roulette player for over 20 years. It's the only book about visual roulette prediction that I'm aware of. And so I'm really happy to have him here. Lawrence, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you very much, Richard and Bob. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your program. I really like the story about raising the money. Are you sure they wouldn't have taken a check?
The players?
Yes.
No, the casino. The casino had to take
the players had to give the money to the casino to get into the tournament.
The casino could have taken the check then.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about roulette. It's kind of a passion, an obsession, if you will, with
me. Can you tell us, first of all, did you start out, most people get into professional gambling as blackjack players. Did you start that way? And what led you to roulette?
Yes, I did. I had a brother who lived in Las Vegas, since the mid-50s. He was kind of with the old-time Vegas people. And so I came to Vegas quite often. And I remember him telling me once, he says, you know, Larry, if they just take a five out of one of these single decks and you play, you got a little bit of an edge. And so I didn't think much about it at the time. But
he was right.
Yeah, he was right. Then Thorpe's book came out, and then I kind of got serious late in life. It was back in 1987. I read Revere's book, as most people did, although it was way after, you know, all the glory days had passed for that. I actually did blackjack play for about a year, but at the end of the year, I couldn't tell if I was just a bad blackjack player or just having a negative fluctuation. It's hard to tell, but the bottom line was I didn't make any money. And roulette just caught my fancy. I looked at the wheel. I was aware of another book out at the time called The Eudaimonic Pie that described a group of people who had beat the wheel using a timing computer or had tried. So I thought, well, gee, maybe I can do the same thing by eye. And I just sat. I went to Vegas. And I just watched the wheels. I got kicked out of a couple of places, but then finally.
Just for standing there watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
The Stardust did not appreciate anybody, either watching nor writing down numbers. I got chased out of there, chased out of a couple of places. I was very surprised about that. But that's the way it goes. I eventually bought my own wheel. which was the basis of the video and that is in the system. It's actually my hand, and my daughter actually made part of the video. It's her hand in there sometimes. But that's how I did get in through blackjack, a very brief and non-eventful career in blackjack, but I found roulette was really my true calling.
Now, what percentage of roulette wheels are beatable by the method, the visual method you talk about in your book?
That's an excellent question, and that's probably the question I get asked the most. Wheels are really never beatable 100% of the time versus non-beatable. To find a wheel that is beatable every time you walk up to it is quite rare, maybe one in 100 or 200. But wheels that exhibit behavior under which certain conditions, if you're knowledgeable, you can beat it, I'd say is about one out of five. About 20% of the wheels out there are wheels that if you do your proper research and you pick your spots and you look and can recognize when you have an edge, you will have an edge for the spins that you play.
So if we break that down further, in the old days, the wheels had deep pockets. And then, I don't know when, I'm guessing about 10 years ago or 15 years ago, they went to kind of the low profile.
Yes.
And then there was a third phase where now it looks like a thumbprint. The pockets are just these little indentations.
Right, right.
So if you took each one of those segments, the deep pockets, the low profile, and then the... What should we call those thumbprint wheels?
We call them the starbursts.
Starburst. Okay. Yeah. So what percentage of those are beatable? I mean, of each of those categories?
Okay. If you can find the older style wheel, the deep pocket wheels, which there aren't really many of them left, probably one in three would exhibit behavior that you could take advantage of. The low profile is probably still about one in five or six, believe it or not. There are different types of low profile. You'd have to learn the different types. But generally, there are some unanticipated consequences of the low profile wheel where the manufacturers thought that they were thwarting the prediction player. And to a large extent, they did. It used to be you could get you can get windows where your edge was breathtaking, not only with a computer can do it, and we can maybe talk about that later, but even visually with a deep pocket wheel where the ball will stick where it drops off, you can get periods where you're breathtaking. I can remember there was one casino had a $5 limit, but in 3 hours, just betting $5 a number, I won $5,000 just with betting visually. I was betting three numbers and winning, like, you know, one out of three. but that's quite rare now because the way they design the low profile wheel so that even if you can predict where the ball drops off the track, then it's going to be randomized to a certain extent when it hits the wheel because the pockets are shallower. The ball will tend not to stick. However, what they did was they made it so that you don't get these really high breathtaking edges, but there's much less of a penalty now when you're wrong in your prediction. So, for example, if you think the ball's going to drop from a certain place and the wheel's going to be positioned, and let's say you got the prediction revolution wrong, or the ball just didn't drop from that place, the ball has a much better chance of getting into the numbers that you bet simply because of the enhanced scatter of the wheel. So it made it so that it kind of smoothed out your play to a certain extent. You didn't get the tremendous edges, but you didn't get the penalties were not so fierce for getting the predictions wrong, if that makes any sense.
If somebody wanted to learn your visual prediction methods, and they're willing to study hard, mm-hmm, how long is it going to take them to get competent in your technique?
It takes about 40 hours of really focused practice to get to the point where you can use the technique to beat a wheel that is beatable. And then you find that it's learning the technique is simply one aspect. Then comes the part of finding the opportunities and then learning how to comport yourself in a casino and at a table so that you can actually execute the technique.
I think your estimate is low. I think you mentioned your son or daughter you trained in that amount of time. But I think for someone at home who doesn't have the benefit of you standing there with them, helping them, I think that's low. I think it but you bring up a really important point. For years, I've said it's really easy to learn to count cards. It's really hard to learn how to take money out of casinos at it.
Absolutely.
And I think with roulette, that is very much the same case. Even if you learn how to do this, you have to learn how to get away with it. Because if Larry can get thrown out just for standing and watching a wheel, then you can imagine what it's like if you're also trying to watch the wheel and bet.
That's correct. I may have discounted the fact that I've just been around the game so long. I mean, I think if somebody's never been around the game of roulette, then you're right. It would probably behoove them just to get some experience at the game, just know what it is before they even try and learn the techniques.
How long do you think, let's say, I mean, one of the impediments that people have is it's really difficult to learn if you don't own a roulette wheel. Right? I mean, if you have to try to learn in the casino, I think it makes it much more difficult.
That is correct.
So what about the transition? Let's say that you got to the point where you could beat a wheel that you've kind of jacked up on one side in your home, kind of creating the most ideal conditions you can create. How long does it take that knowledge into a casino and beat a new wheel that you've never played before?
Well, again, that's a great question. In the days of the deep pocket wheels, it probably took me about 6 months of elapsed time. It's not like I spent all that time in the casinos, but it was probably 6 months before I was able to take the theory of the technique and actually say, gee, I'm walking out of the casino with a few hundred bucks in my pocket.
Ah, so 6 months playing how often?
That was maybe playing three or four times a month, because I didn't have the benefit of living in a place where there was casinos. If you actually live in a place like Las Vegas or Atlantic City or some other place where there's a casino, you have a tremendous advantage. I did not have that advantage. I had my wheel at home, so I had to travel. I generally traveled about once a week to different venues, and I took my lumps for a while, but it wasn't that I wasn't successful in being able to predict. I wasn't successful in being, I didn't know the ins and outs of taking the money out, as you say.
How did your wife feel about all this?
As long as I brought home money, she didn't have a problem with it.
I know that one. Now, we're talking about a tilted wheel. A few months ago, we had a man named Mark Bilas on the show, and he talked about biased wheels.
Billings.
All right.
Billings. Yeah.
Right. Good. Thank you. I apologize.
That's right.
What is the difference between a tilted wheel and a biased wheel?
Okay. In a biased wheel, there are defects in the wheel that cause certain numbers to statistically come in more often than they should. Or you can even look at it as it's causing some numbers to come in less than they should. You can look at it that way. So the defect is affecting the outcome of the game. In a tilted wheel, it really doesn't affect the outcome of the game. If you took a series of 10,000 or 20,000 numbers from a tilted wheel, you could look at that and would pass all the statistical tests. The only thing a tilt gives you is it gives you the knowledge of where the ball is going to fall from the track. Because think of something like the Titanic. It's tilted, 10 or 15 or 20 degrees. And think of that ball rotating around the track. Well, the ball is partly time it's going to be going downhill. Part of the time it's going to be going uphill. Well, it's going to lose a lot of energy when it's going uphill, and it will tend to drop just before the apex of that tilt. So a tilt gives a predictive player the advantage of knowing where the ball's going to drop from the track. However, it's random in the game of roulette because the wheel could be in a random position underneath the ball.
Right. So not good for a biased player, but very good for a predictive player.
That's right. Now, there are certain compensating biases where a tilt, some bias players look for a tilt because it's compensating in some other ways where maybe there are certain parts of the wheel that might have be under that tilt, that apex a percentage of the time, but that's kind of a whole other area.
Can you actually see, are the tilts big enough you can see them? Or is it just something you have to test, and if it ends up in one spot so much percent of the time?
You have to pretty much deduce it statistically. In the old days when it wasn't generally known that was a benefit to the predictive player, you could find a lot of wheels that were tilted. The casinos didn't routinely level their wheels. I mean, maybe if someone came in and hit them for a lot, but the casinos routinely do level their wheels now. But what you find, for various reasons, it's almost impossible to truly level a wheel. And what is common now is that the tilt is just subtle enough so that it's not dropping from one dominant place. And I consider dominance to be 7 times out of 10, where it's dropping from the same 1/8 of the wheel. You don't find dominance, but you find it where what we call bimodal. It may be dropping from two different places more frequently than it should, and there's ways you can take advantage of that. And that's some of the things I deal with in the advanced book. I can give you just a little sample of that. There's a thing. If you're going to beat the low profile wheels these days, you have to use various techniques. And one of the techniques I use is the concept of compensating wheel speed. And it's kind of hard to visualize, but I'll just kind of say what happens. If you have a wheel that's tilted just very slightly, just so the ball's coming off in two distinct places, and it's generally 90 degrees from one another. It's generally right at the apex of the tilt and then right before the apex. There exists a wheel speed, and it's generally a reasonable speed. It's generally somewhere around 2.2 to 2.4 seconds per revolution. There exists a wheel speed that will compensate for when the ball comes off at either of those points. So if you predict in a certain fashion, and you say, okay, the number zero is going to be in my prediction, zero will be under the dominant drop point when the ball's over there. But if the ball fails to drop in that point and then drops at the secondary point, the wheel compensates and zeroes also under that spot as well. And what you find these days is you find wheels that are only predictable at very certain wheel speeds. And that's really what I look for out there now, is I have to deduce the fact that it's tilted. And once you find a wheel, you kind of hold on to it. But you only play certain select speeds. You have to know what those speeds are. And again, it's all deduced by experience and playing and observation. Because it just seems intractable. But then when the wheel's going at that particular speed, it's like magic. It's like all of a sudden, everything's just working. And that's typically why.
And it's the dealer who spins the wheel. So this is, you're looking for particular dealers who spin it at a particular rate? And you stay away from dealers who spin faster or slower?
You're looking mainly for dealers that aren't trying to mess with you and who are – obviously, you need the wheel speed that you're looking for. I have kind of an advantage and a bit of a bias in that I cut my teeth in Nevada, and I play in Las Vegas and a few other venues. But – here, the dealers are by and large trained to say, okay, we're going to deal fast, medium, slow, fast, medium, slow. It's kind of rare to find a dealer who just all the time just deals the same. And in fact, if you start to win and beat such a dealer, then the pit boss will gently remind them that, excuse me, you should be dealing fast, medium, slow. So it's not like a dealer is going to deal you all slow or all fast. You typically get a range, and then the trick is to wait for when you get the right speed and the right conditions dealt to you. And it's kind of almost like a blackjack in the sense that you're just sitting treading water until you get the very high count. Here you're sitting and treading water until you get just the optimum speed conditions that you want.
And sitting at the table and not betting two or three rounds is no problem?
That can be a problem.
We, you can bet much less. It's like card counting. You bet small in the bad spins and big in the large spins.
Right. We're not going to touch too much on biased wheels, but one thing you do, if you're going to really target a wheel, what you want to do is you want to take a good body of data on that wheel, not only the data for your visual prediction, such as drop-off and that sort of thing, but you're going to have a raw set of numbers, and there are certain statistics you can use. And what I always try and do is make sure if I'm going to be at the table and I'm going to pre-bet, I try and pre-bet the numbers that are the ones that have come up the most over the past number of spins that I've recorded.
So now, if there is a bias, you're going to get it.
If there is a bias, I'm going to get it. I'm going to try and get it. So what I think is doable and accomplishable is you can find wheels that are visually predictive. And typically, if you do diligent statistics, you might be lucky enough to find a bias that simply overcome. All you're really looking for is something that can overcome the house edge, because you're not going to find much else. But
wouldn't you be better off going out into Timbuktu and, I mean, you know, places like Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa, where they may have old beat-up wheels that and dealers that aren't, you know, I mean, it would seem to me there would be much better opportunities in those kind of out-of-the-way places. But have you explored that?
I have explored it. You'd be surprised in the out-of-the-way places how good the wheels are, because generally they have, my experience is that they have consultants that have told them, well, get these new kind of wheels or whatever. My experience is that the out-of-way places do not have the older deep pocket type wheels. They might have low profile wheels. There's several types. But to answer your question more thoroughly, there's a certain shelf time that you have on predictive roulette based upon how you're going to take the money out. If you're going to go and you're going to say, gee, I've got 3 days to take the money out, and so therefore I have to bet at the $25 or $50 level to make the money that justifies the travel expenses and getting there and staying there and the risk, you're going to stand out because nobody bets that kind of money on those places.
Right.
And if you do start to show success, you'll probably get shut down because you just are so noticeable. I mean, you're just this strange guy that comes in, bets a lot of money at roulette, and you win, and you exhibit the characteristics of a predictive player, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon these days. Now, what is feasible, and in fact, I did this in a casino. I won't mention where, but you can groom yourself as a local player who comes in and they get used to just seeing you around the roulette table. You know, you write down numbers, and every once in a while you get in and play, but you play at the nickel action. And that can go on forever if you find the right opportunity. But that's really only available if you live in that jurisdiction and are willing to develop that as a long-term opportunity.
Hmm. So recently there was a lot of sort of discussion in the Advantage Play world because Arnold Snyder had written a couple of articles about roulette, about predictive roulette. But the one that people sort of took notice of was his assertion that dealers can aim the roulette ball. A lot of people think Arnold's out of his mind. What's your take on that?
This is a hotly debated subject in roulette boards and outside of the professional roulette community. Inside the professional community, we just laugh at that because it's true on its face, prima facie. I mean, it's a fact of life. When a dealer first starts out, they probably can't do it. But there are some dealers, especially here in Las Vegas, that have been dealing the same wheel every night, except for their nights off, for maybe 10, 12 years. And they don't really learn, as a dealer, you don't learn the mechanics of it per se. But what happens is they know how to spin the ball, and there's different ways you can spin the ball that you can enhance the effect of the tilt and the drop point. And then they get the wheel going at just the right speed so that it's they don't really even realize it, but they're dealing a compensating speed. And it's just like magic.
Well, Arnold had a big discussion about this actually back in the 80s when he had Blackjack Forum, the magazine. And at the time, I didn't know him, and I remember this big discussion happening in Blackjack Forum. And for the first time, I wrote him a letter. And Arnold's conclusion at that time was, because he went and talked to a number of experts, he wasn't trying to play roulette. Mm-hmm. He was an outside observer. And he went and talked to a number of experts, including Steve Forte, and his conclusion at that time was, all the dealers believe they can do it, but I don't think they can. They're fooling themselves. And I wrote him a letter and I said, you know, I dealt roulette, and I believe that you can teach someone to do it in an hour, or at least I can make you realize that it's absolutely true within 1 hour. Yep. And the way I would do it is, don't even spin the wheel. Just learn to spin the ball so that it goes around the exact same number of revolutions every time. You know, so pick 12. You're going to spin the ball the same way it goes 12 times every time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guarantee you, you can learn to do that in 1 hour, probably more like about 15 minutes.
But my experience and my view is that you do need a little help from the wheel.
I agree. And one of those starburst wheels that you're talking about, I think it would be, you know, really, really difficult.
Tougher. It's tougher. It's still doable to a certain extent. I can tell you that what's very frustrating for an experienced dealer, of which in the high-end places here in town, there you get dealers that have been dealing the game for 25, 30 years. They get frustrated at times because I can tell they're trying to aim, they're trying to do things, and it's just not working, and they don't quite understand why that is. But what happens is that the dynamics of the ball as it goes around the track, one of the big things that affects the ball is air pressure, a storm front moving in. Just very little changes in where that ball comes off can make big changes in the dynamics of the numbers that come up. For example, there's vertical diamonds. If the ball comes off anywhere about 3 inches before a vertical diamond, it's going to tend to hit that diamond. The diamond is going to quantize it. It's going to go straight down. And imagine that the wheel's spinning and you're expert at spinning the ball and having it come off in a certain area, and it'll come down and it'll hit that diamond and boom, go down. Well, the air pressure, a difference of about 5 millibars in air pressure can make it so now the ball just misses the diamond.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, your technique isn't working anymore. So the dealers do need help from the wheel, but given that they have, I think where people get confused is that if you go to any dealer who says that they can do this, it's maybe I would say 50-50 at best chance that they can do it on demand, because they can't predict how the wheel's going to be acting at that particular instant in time.
Well, the other thing you hear is, if dealers could do this, you know, they'd have their friends in there making all this money. And my contention is they are. I've certainly seen things going on at roulette wheels that I thought were very suspicious. And when it's happening, if you go bet on top of those players, suddenly those players stop playing.
Yeah, I think it does happen to a certain extent at lower stakes. You have to be very aware of the action. You see, people think, wow, if a dealer can do this, you know, their cohorts are going to make millions of dollars. We're all going to get rich. But you have to look at the daily take of what a roulette wheel brings into a casino. And a lot of the lower end places, they're lucky to make $300 or $400 a day off of a roulette wheel. And so if you're a dealer that's experiencing this, and you come and you and your cohort whack them for $400 or $500 a day, well, they're going to start looking and seeing what's going on, and you're either going to be told to stop or you're going to lose your job. And if you lose your job, you've lost it in every place.
Yeah.
One thing I found being around Advantage players for almost 25 years is that Advantage players are a special breed of people who think in a very different way than most what people would think, normal people with a job. And my experience is that dealers are not the type of mindset of an advantage player. They're very concerned about their job. I mean, there are exceptions, obviously, mm-hmm. but I think dealers tend to be very loyal to their employers, and they are genuinely scared of losing their jobs, and are just not into the whole risk factor that an advantage player may be.
What would be like the strangest thing that ever happened to you at a roulette wheel?
Well, I'm gonna have to think about that one, but there are times things happen at a roulette wheel which are almost mystical to me. But the strangest thing I think that ever happened was this was in Biloxi, Mississippi, so it was even enhanced because it was in the South. A young woman, she was probably about 22 or 23, had brought her mother into the casino as a birthday present. She was going to show her mother a good night on the town. But her mother was, no dig against born-again Christians at all, but she was very religious, a born-again Christian, and it was her view, which she made clearly known to everybody within earshot, that the casino was the place of the devil, that her daughter had done an unforgivable sin, bringing her into this den of iniquity, and that she was just very upset.
Uh-huh.
Her daughter grew about 2 feet tall, just embarrassed, and finally said, "Mom, look, it's your birthday. Can you just humor me? Put a dollar on your birthday." So her mother reached into her purse, and it was just like it was her last dollar on planet Earth, took that out, clutched it, and told her daughter, "Y'all, you're going to see why playing in a casino is just like throwing your money down the toilet." So she puts her dollar on her birthday. The dealer spins the ball, and it came up. The dealer pushes a stack of 35 chips toward that woman, and the woman's eyes get about as big as golf balls, and she goes, "What's that?" And dealer says, "You won. That's your winnings." And she goes, "How much is it?" And she's taking the chips, and she's counting them. And he spins the ball again, and it repeats. Her birthday repeats, and so he pushes another $35. Well, she got $70. She didn't play another spin. She was the happiest, most giddy person you've ever seen in your life. Now her daughter was the most wonderful person in the world, and I hate to think what that woman is doing now, because she got hooked.
Yeah.
A sucker is born. It turns out that I'm sure that statistically, if I went back, it's there's nothing to it, but you tend to remember events like that, and there's just a lot of times when you see novices come up to a wheel, they bet on a number, and boom, it comes up.
Now, you had some strange experiences with people who bought your book and tried to use your system?
Oh, absolutely. I got a person who bought the system. This was back in the early 90s when I first sold the system. It was kind of an exclusive. It still is exclusive, but there were only a few hundred people who had bought the system. And I get a call from this gentleman, and he's on his way to Europe to play in a casino. And he calls and he says, "Look, I bought your system. I read it. It seems really good. I'm really impressed, but I don't really have time to learn it. Can you just tell me the numbers?"
Meaning that number 9 is going to hit on Tuesday and number 10 is going to hit on Wednesday? Or
something like that. I feel really bad because I gave him some numbers. I don't know how he turned out. But, he just wanted the numbers. I had...
If somebody actually wanted personalized instruction from you today, perhaps more knowledge than just the numbers, are you available for consultation, and how does somebody get a hold of you?
Yes, I am available. You can get a hold of me through RGE or maybe even through this radio program. I'm also, my email address is lawrence.scott, that's LAURANCE.scott@yahoo.com. You can email me.
And you live in Vegas? Don't live in Vegas.
Used to live in Vegas.
All right.
But I can get here very quickly, and I can tell you this. I've only given instruction to maybe 2 people over the years, because for everybody who says they want personalized instruction, when it comes time for them to get on a plane, spend the airfare, and actually get here, it never seems to quite take place.
Well, and also, like blackjack, when it comes time to actually do some work, to actually put in the effort to try to learn something, you know, my experience is 99% of them, it's over at that point.
That's true. And another thing, it's actually quite tragic. It kind of speaks to the whole gambling scene altogether, is that 99% of the people who I talk to about beating roulette don't have two nickels to rub together. Hmm. And they're looking at casino gambling as the easy way to make money. And it's probably the hardest way to make money that I know of.
I don't know. I would think playing in the NBA would be tougher. For me, anyway.
I don't know. Coal mining.
Coal mining. Yeah, you've got a very good point. Point taken.
Now, you played blackjack for a while, and so in comps, is it better? Blackjack, you don't really get good comps. I would think in roulette, you'd get better comps. Is that true?
That's that's very true. In a lot of casinos, blackjack is really underrated. I believe now, at least in Vegas, when they rate you at blackjack, they're assuming that you're of such a knowledgeable player that they have an average 0.75% over you. In other words, you may pay badly enough to where you're playing with a 2 or 3% disadvantage, but you're not getting comps for that. You're getting comps as if you were a semi-professional player. In other words, you're getting pretty much next to nothing. In roulette, that's not the case. The comps are all based upon a fixed edge of 5.25% against you on a double zero game, which is a lot against you. But the fact that you're actually willing to step up and play that game, you get literally four times the comps you do at blackjack. And I can recommend that people...
You should get more than that. If you're at 0.75 and you're going all the way to 5.25...
It's because of the turns. Because at roulette, they only rated at about 32 spins an hour. Blackjack,
right.
They rated about 90 spins an hour. So it's about one-third the turns.
Uh-huh.
That's the key. I would highly recommend that people buy Max Rubin's book, Comp City.
Uh-huh.
And he discusses a variety of techniques that currently work very well at the game of roulette to enhance your comp value. And roulette can be a game. I can say that a good, not the majority percentage by any means, but a good part of my return at the game of roulette is through the comps.
Now, what about, is Las Vegas the worst venue in terms of the amount of heat that people get for roulette? I mean, the idea of barring people for just standing and watching a wheel is mind-boggling to me. Of course, it was mind-boggling when I first learned that they barred people for playing slot machines. So,
Vegas is right up there. I think if the real problem with roulette in Las Vegas is, in fact, the question I get asked most, or the comment that I get the most at a table from the dealer staff is, "Are you still here?" And that's because nobody lasts. Nobody makes any money. So just the fact that you're there and making money is almost cause for heat. So I mean, you have to learn how to disguise that a bit. There are venues like London, for example. I played in London for many years. That's like heaven. They don't bar you, and there's so much action on roulette and roulette degenerate players that you just blend right in, and the betting over there, everything about over there is so much better than Las Vegas.
But you just didn't want to live there anymore?
I didn't. I traveled there. I probably maybe taken 40 or 50 trips there. The fact is, in London, It's kind of a dichotomy. In London, the actual conditions for a roulette player are much better. But believe it or not, the beatable opportunities here in Las Vegas are much more numerous.
Huh.
It's just that you can't expect to go and just be brazen and ride out there and expect to take advantage of it for any length of time and get away with it. You have to learn to disguise what you're doing, not get greedy. I know several professional players in town, and almost all of them will just stick with nickel action, $5 chips, just blend right in.
Hmm. I understand roulette is really popular in South America. Have you gone down there?
I have not gone down there. I'd love to go down to Buenos Aires. I know that there are several casinos down there near Buenos Aires. I think one has several. I have over 100 roulette wheels.
That's what I hear, yeah.
I have gotten reports from there. I know some people down there who are playing those wheels and beating those wheels. But personally, I don't. I've kind of gotten traveling out of my system in my old age.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean.
I do. I know exactly what you mean. I'm the same way.
If I reached in my wallet, I could show you my American Airlines 3 million mile club card, and that's a lot of time on an airplane.
I actually got a 2 million mile card before I ever got on an American airline in the late 90s and early 2000s. MGM Grand were giving you American Airline miles as a slot club benefit.
Wow.
And so I got this platinum for life. Anyway, that was pretty cool. Now, how often do casinos recognize you as an advantage player and take countermeasures? And what kind of countermeasures can they take which would actually be effective?
Typically, if the casino doesn't know me, they like my action for quite some time. It's rare that I've gone up to a situation where they've never seen me before and I get really bad countermeasures. Once they do get to know you, if they know you as someone who is betting late, and you're blatant about it, the most effective countermeasure they have is just cutting off your betting. They'll never really tell you to leave that you can't play the game. But what they will tell you is the movement of your hand will be their key to say no more bets. That's when you know you've overstayed your welcome. What's interesting as well is what you'll find, which is very odd, is that you would think that a professional dealer who doesn't really have a financial interest in the game wouldn't care. But I found there are certain athletes, certain ethnicities, that seem to be worse than others, but dealers will take it personally that you're trying to beat them.
Yep.
And even without instruction from the pit, we'll start messing with you.
That happens in blackjack too. I mean,
So it's very rare. It's rare that it's a house policy where they just say, you just call no more bets. It's almost always dealer specific, and you can get tremendous heat on one shift, and then you can go back the next shift on a friendly dealer, and everything's just fine.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate learning more about roulette tonight. We're going to do some commercials. We may have a few moments for one more question at the end. Hopefully you can stick around.
Thank you very much.
The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. During this entire month, there's a $400,000 March Money Madness Progressive. The Progressive starts at $10,000 and continues 24/7 until it hits sometime before $25,000, when it will be randomly awarded to any active slot club player. That includes video poker players. Every player playing when the jackpot is awarded receives $25 in free play. Immediately thereafter, another jackpot will begin at $10,000 and start to climb. This weekend through Saturday night, there will be four virtual NASCAR races at 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, and 9:30. To qualify, you need to play 100 points in the hour prior to the drawing. At the announced time, you select one driver from among 8 or 10. And then a virtual race is played where you actually see on a screen on your machine. It's kind of like a little television machine, little television screen. Whoever selects the winning driver will receive an equal share of $5,000 free play that's awarded. Last time they did this, the prizes averaged about $60 each time. So 1 in 10 chance of winning 60 means you have an EV of $6 if you play. The Money Madness is going at the same time, so it's higher than that. Next weekend, Sunday, March 17th, is St. Patrick's Day. It'll be double point day. Wouldn't surprise me that the following two weekends, Palm Sunday or Easter Sunday, also become double point days. It's not been announced as yet, but it could be. The free video poker class beginning at noon this coming Tuesday will be NSU Deuces Wild. NSU stands for Not So Ugly. It was a name given by the late Skip Hughes.
I'm pretty sure alcohol was involved in the naming of the game, but somehow it stuck. This game, returning 99.73%, may be found at the casino at the nickel level through $2 level or at 5-cent 50-play machines. Since the casino has a .30 slot club, it is basically a break-even game 24-7, and on double point days, you have a .33 advantage. This is the first of three Deuces Wild variations that we're going to teach over the next 3 weeks. So if you attend, you're going to get a better grasp of how pay schedule variations change correct strategies. Sometimes flushes pay two, sometimes flushes pay three, and that's going to change things. Sometimes full houses pay three, sometimes full houses pay four. Sometimes various other things change. Straights pay two, or sometimes straights pay one. And so there's a lot of different changes, and the more you get used to how it changes, the better off you are when you sit down at a game that you don't know as well. At the Palms, every weekend in March, the Palms is giving away a 2013 Volkswagen Jetta car. The car is worth about $18,000, and you can receive $15,000 in either cash or free play if you prefer. You're drawing tickets throughout the previous week on both Friday and Saturday night drawings. Players, 10 players, each win $500 plus a key to the car on Saturday, and one of the 20 people on Saturday gets the car. Everybody else gets some money. And you can win once each night, so it's possible to have 2 out of 20 keys for the car on Friday. And the other prizes are significant. This is a much bigger than average drawing for the Palms. Between now and this Sunday, March 10th, they're having a bingo promotion, which is first video poker and slots, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. It isn't actually bingo, but it's a 5x5 card where you mark off squares for getting various hands, like four kings, 1,000 points in a day, a royal flush, etc. The most lucrative card percentage-wise is 25-cent video poker, limited to single line, triple play, or five play. The play, earn, and win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, has a theme of home sweet home through the 13th. The top prize is a $100 gift card to Sports Authority. You also win a vacuum cleaner, barbecue pit, clock, other prizes. Halfway through the month, starting next Friday, the 15th, the theme will be Light Up My Life, where the top prize is a $100 gift to Lowe's Hardware. You can also earn a toolbox, fake fireplace, kitchen clock, among other gifts. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest in March will be on the game Deal Draw Poker. This is a variation of Double Pay Poker, which is several years old, but the layout is much better. I'm going to need to study it closer to find out exactly what the differences are, and I'll tell you next week. Our guest next week will be Barry Meadow. He wrote the book Blackjack Autumn, which 15 years ago he went around and played blackjack in every casino in the state of Nevada, and he split tens in Winnemucca. So, and we're trying to get in 2 weeks Bob Nersessian, to a lawyer, Supreme Court lawyer, to come on our show again.
If he'll still talk to us. He's hoity-toity now.
He's hoity-toity now? All right. Oh, we still give him, I think I like it when he comes on the air. All right. So we mentioned Mark Billings was on the show for Roulette several weeks ago. Probably in April he's going to be on, because he also wrote a blackjack book in the 80s. So he'll be on talking to us then. So we want to thank you, everybody. Thank you, Lawrence Scott. Richard, go out and hit royal flushes, everybody. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.